The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
It's nice to see you all. It being a holiday, I think for many people, I was kind of expecting everybody would sleep in or go for a hike or something, so it's nice to see you all. Thank you. So I'd like to start the talk this morning with a simile that the Buddha gave about a goldsmith, which at first was a little bit surprising for me to think about goldsmiths. You know, thousands of years ago, people are working with gold. So the simile goes like this. Suppose a goldsmith would prepare a hot furnace, heat up a crucible. Crucible, for those of you may remember from high school chemistry or something, is like a receptacle that can take a lot of heat. It's something that you would put something in that you wanted to melt and work with. So a goldsmith would prepare a hot furnace, heat up a crucible, take some gold using tongs and put it into the crucible or receptacle. And then from time to time, the goldsmith would blow on it, or would sprinkle water on it, or from time to time, they would just look on as the gold was heating. But if the goldsmith were to only blow on it, it's possible that the gold would get too hot and burn up. Or if the goldsmith were to only be sprinkling water on it, the gold would get too cold. Or if the goldsmith were to only just look at the gold would not reach the right consistency if they didn't do any of those things, either blow on it or sprinkle water on it. But if the goldsmith would from time to time blow on it, sprinkle water on it, or just watch it, then the gold would become malleable, wieldy, luminous, pliant, and able to be worked. Then whatever ornament the goldsmith wished to make, whether it was a bracelet or earrings, a necklace or a garland, that can be achieved. I haven't ever done goldsmithing, but I have made pancakes, and it seems it's kind of similar, both in, is it too much flour or adding water to get the right consistency, as well as when you're cooking pancakes, right, to know when to flip them over and know when to just watch, right? So we're probably all familiar with this idea of either with cooking or maybe something else we had to do. There's a little bit of activity that needs to be done, and there's also some just watching. And you can't just do one activity. Like, no matter what's happening, you can't just add flour to the pancake mix. Or no matter what's happening, you can't just add water. Right? We know this from our experience. So then the Buddha continues. In the same way, when a practitioner is devoted to developing a heightened mind, they should give attention to three qualities or three experiences. Energy, concentration, and equanimity. However, if the practitioner were to exclusively pay attention to the degree of energy, then it's possible that their mind would veer towards restlessness. Or if the practitioner were to exclusively pay attention to the degree of concentration, then it's possible that their mind would veer towards indolence or laziness or kind of a dullness. Or if the practitioner were to exclusively pay attention to equanimity, that it's possible that their mind would not be properly concentrated. It wouldn't be pliable, malleable, workable. But if the practitioner from time to time would pay attention to the degree of energy, concentration, and equanimity, then their mind would become malleable, wieldy, luminous, pliant, and properly concentrated for the destruction of the taints and for liberation. So just like with gold we make ornaments, we're doing this practice for the destruction of the taints and freedom. Without going into details, I'll say this destruction of the taints. So I'll say, loosely we could say those are the things that keep us away from freedom. Destruction sounds like a harsh word, but it's more like creating the conditions in which those things are no longer there. So in my interpretation, this simile points to two things. One is the importance of balanced attention, so not exclusively looking at just one thing. That is, am I able to stay on the breath? Or this feeling of, am I more calm? Or maybe, am I just able to stay awake for those times of meditation? But instead, we're checking in with a number of different things, not only maybe the degree of calmness, but maybe also the degree of alertness. And not only what the quality of the mind is, but maybe also what the quality of the body is. And we're doing this from time to time. We're not only looking at one thing as a criteria of how to practice or the quality of our practice. As well as not only to look intermittently at different aspects of our practice, but indeed to look at different aspects of our practice. As I said, not just one criteria. So there's importance to have balance. We all know this. This isn't anything new. We know this for all aspects of our lives, right? It's important to have balance. But in particular, this simile points to how energy and concentration can balance each other. I guess maybe this is suggested in this simile. But for those of you who are familiar with the teaching of the five faculties and the seven factors of awakening, you'll know that energy and concentration often are depicted as balancing each other. I'm not going to go into details about the five faculties or the seven factors of awakening. But we know this from our own experience, that if we're feeling restless and agitated with a lot of energy, it's difficult to get quiet and collect the mind. We know this, right? Energy and concentration. If one's a little bit out of balance, it can affect the other one. And the same, it's the opposite is true. If we're too quiet, we have a little bit of, without energy, our minds, we can kind of sink into this foggy, drifty, cottony kind of place. Or we don't, our mind isn't malleable or luminous or pliant. So maybe I'll say this, there's also another simile that has to do with the five faculties. And I like this simile, it's for me it's very evocative, and I use this in my practice. And that is of a chariot that's being pulled by four horses, you know, a pair of horses and then a second pair of horses, and then a charioteer, somebody who's guiding the horses and telling them where to go. And in this simile, one pair of horses is energy and concentration. So, right, these two have to be walking together and galloping together. The other two are faith and wisdom. Same thing, they have to be walking at the same speed. We can't have one of the pair going at a different speed than the other. And then mindfulness is the charioteer that is directing them. And it's probably helping to notice whether one is out of the balance or another. But I imagine as horses start to work together, if they know when they're to be in concord, you know, to be working together. In the same way with the seven factors of awakening, we talk about there's energizing factors and calming factors. Without going into a big teaching, the seven factors of awakening, we see the same thing. Energy is an energizing factor, and it can be balanced by concentration, which is a calming factor. So I'm going to focus a little bit more today on energy and how it's important to have balanced energy in this practice. First of all, I'll start by saying We all have to apply energy to our practice. It does require a little bit of effort. And in this talk, I'm going to define effort as the application of energy. So energy is like the capacity to do work, quote unquote, and then the application of that energy is effort. So just in this practice, we do have to have some energy and apply some effort, just like we can't hold a tennis racket for a few minutes once a month and think that we can become tennis players, right? It's the same thing, that we have to consistently and with some diligence work with the practice. And we have to do it for ourselves. Even the Buddha couldn't transform other people. He couldn't just zap them in some way and they become awakened. Instead, he could give clear Dharma talks that somehow, for some, I would say, lucky individuals, they would have an awakening experience. But that was because they heard a Dharma talk and somehow were able to incorporate it and work with it and make sense of it, that it can transform them in some way. So it, just like it takes energy to listen to a Dharma talk or to keep showing up for whatever's happening, whatever is arising in our life, whatever is arising in that moment, it takes some energy and some effort to meet this with as much balance of heart and mind as possible. And then because we have human bodies, we don't have unlimited energy. So we have to, a part of practice is to learn to apply the energy that we have in a balanced and effective way without getting overwhelmed or without burning up our energy or dissipating our energy. However, the midpoint between too much energy and not much energy can be surprisingly difficult to find. It's not so easy sometimes to know exactly what that is. Sometimes practitioners talk about this idea of right effort. However, the teachings of right effort are a little bit different. That's more about the specific application of energy in a particular way. I think when a lot of times when people use that expression right effort, they're really talking about this trying to find the right amount of energy, the right way to balance the one's energy, not too much and not too little. So the teacher Sayadaw Utejaniya, he has the example of just for, to know, like when you have your two hands that are touching, like how much energy does it take to just know that? It actually doesn't take a lot. Just to notice what it feels like to have your two hands touching. It's much less than we often think. We often are thinking that we have to be striving, right? That we have to somehow like pounce on our experience in a way to know it fully or know it completely or something like this. And the Buddha gave yet another simile, and that is about tuning a stringed musical instrument. Maybe you've heard this, or indeed play a stringed musical instrument. The idea, right, that the string can't be too tight or too loose. It has to be just right to get the note that you want. So in the same way, we have to apply energy to our practice. And then, but what happens often is that there's right too much or too little. And one way that we experience too much energy shows up as striving, shows up as this kind of leaning forward, I have to do more. Doesn't matter what I've done or what I'm doing, it's not quite enough. To do more. Even when I'm talking about this, I find myself leaning forward. It's kind of that experience of it. This may not be surprising that we have this idea that we should be doing more. Our dominant culture is so much about perfectionism, competitiveness, striving, busyness, constant doing, striving. And some of the, even the suttas, if you, those of you who read the suttas, the different translators, you can see kind of their bias and how they do this, how they approach the way they translate. The Buddha's last words, I forget the first part precisely how it is. It's something like, all conditioned things are subject to passing away. I think that's how the first part is. The second part is, one translator is, so strive on untiringly. Another translator has, it is through vigilance that you will succeed. Right? Those have very different feelings, right? To know that whether just to have some vigilance, whether strive on untiringly. So if you have read some of the different suttas with translations, you may come up with this idea, my goodness, I better strive. It's right here. It's when the Buddha himself said it. But that's right under the influence of the translators. As well as Dharma teachers. In particular, I'm thinking of one, a monastic who died just a few years ago, very influential in this scene. He's a Burmese meditation master, Upandita. Some of his works, the way that they've been translated into English, this is a quote, but I've removed a number of the words, so there's a number of ellipses in here, but with boosted energy, we must continue amidst discomfort and pain in order to develop momentum and effort. We must strive, right? So if you read this particular book or had this particular teacher, you would have this feeling that you must strive. And this particular teacher told all his students, you can only sleep for 4 hours a day. You must be meditating 20 hours every day. Right? That's just quite this feeling of whatever you're doing, it's not enough. You know, that's a kind of feeling. I certainly adopted in my own practice this feeling that I needed to strive, that I needed to work very, very hard. And I remember on a retreat having a teacher telling me, you are a striver. I was quite offended. I am not a striver. I just need to work hard. You don't understand. I have all these problems. I have to fix them. I must strive. Right? I just couldn't see how it was so much my world view. I couldn't even see it. But I was coming out of corporate America. Maybe some of you have an experience. These performance evaluations, Diana, you've done great over here. However, you need to do this. It didn't matter what I had achieved or helped achieve. My performance evaluations always had these areas of improvement, which then, you know, of course, I just kind of took that on. Of course, I have to improve this and improve that. And I just brought that to my meditation practice, that kind of mindset. And the second thing that I brought to my meditation practice is I had this idea that, well, if I weren't having particular meditative experiences that I wanted, clearly it must be due because I wasn't working hard enough, right? If I just had applied myself more, then I would have those experiences. But it turns out that striving in this way that I'm describing it is not the way forward. Yes, we have to apply effort, apply energy, we have to make effort. But this over-efforting, this striving, is not the way. And it turns out to be tricky, right? Because often when we're striving, and maybe in a particular meditation period, we may be like bringing our mind back to the object, and then it gets a certain amount of exhausting, so then we kind of collapse, like, oh, we look at our watch, okay, 12 more minutes, I'll just sit here and wait for that damn bell to ring. You know, this feeling of like there's kind of collapsing after like working too hard. So then we have this feeling like, see, I can't even do it. I must work harder. So we can reinforce this feeling. But one way that we can work with striving is to bring awareness to what's going on in two ways. One is to learn about ourselves, learn what our default patterns are. to learn whether are we a person who tends to strive, who tends to want to apply more and more energy? Just what is our kind of our attitude in the world, the way we approach problems or approach our life? And the second is to recognize what's actually happening in this very moment. So one way we can look at our default patterns, which can be really tricky to see, it can be the water that the fish swims in, right? The water, the fish doesn't see it. They can be like just beyond what's obvious. But it doesn't mean that we can't see them. We just have to learn a little ways to see them. And even though they're just beyond what's obvious, doesn't mean they're not greatly influencing our practice. Doesn't mean that they're not really directing what's happening. So here's one way that you can see what some of your attitudes about energy is to just think back, what were some of the thoughts you had when I brought up this topic of energy? Everything like, great, I know it, I just needed to work harder, and in fact this is great, I'm so glad I came because my New Year's resolution is about I was going to work really hard on X. In fact, my meditation practice was going to be this or that or the other thing or something like that. Or it could be like, oh goodness, really? I don't want to hear about energy, I feel overwhelmed already about all the things I have to do, and I wanted to start a meditation practice so I could relax and just kind of sink into some cottony well-being. It could be something like that. But a common default pattern can be to have some form of expectation or wanting that causes you always to be trying a little bit harder in order to meet your expectation, in order to have that experience that you want. So that having this idea that I want this particular outcome can lead to our leaning forward, trying to make that outcome happen. And if that outcome isn't happening, then we try even harder. You can also ask yourself, who would I be if I weren't making this effort? What would happen if I weren't making this amount of effort, if I were to make less amount of effort? And just notice if you ask yourself that question, kind of your intuitive answer or maybe a twinge answer. There can be a fear of like, oh, then I would backslide and turn into a slug and not do anything. Or if I did become a slug, I would be stepped on or overlooked, or I must work in order to be seen and be a valuable member of society. I have to just keep on doing this work and this effort, this energy. You just maybe like just doing a dropping in that question and not trying to think about the answer. Maybe it's a kind of like a gut reaction of who would you be if you weren't applying so much effort, applying so much energy? And whatever you recognize, there's no reason to beat yourself up about your relationship to energy or effort. Because of course you have that way of your relationship to energy. As I mentioned, we have all been socialized in particular ways to think about energy, as well as we all are having particular life experiences. Maybe we're at a time in our life where a lot of our life circumstance is taking a lot of our energy. Or maybe we have experiences earlier in our life that makes us have more or less energy. Or maybe we tend to drink a lot of caffeine that kind of makes us feel like energetic and that we need to do something, kind of fuels that sense of doing something. So whatever you discover about your relationship to energy or however much energy you have, there's no need to apply energy to making that be different. Said you can just recognize it And that recognition itself can be very powerful, especially if that recognition is with kindness. Oh yes, this is just how it is right now. In fact, that might be one of the most powerful antidotes, is to just soften our hearts and like, oh, yeah, okay. This is my reaction to energy. This is my reaction to effort. This is my relationship to it. This is how much I apply. And the second thing that we can do about if we find ourselves that we have too much energy and it is showing up in the form of striving is just to, as we did with our attitude towards striving, is to recognize what's happening in this very moment. Right? This is kind of mindfulness practice. But to specifically look at what's happening in this moment with energy, you can look back and see what was your reaction when the bell rang. Was there a little feeling like, oh, okay, you know, this like this letting go? Or was it kind of a waking up, like, oh yeah, right. I recently sat a retreat in Massachusetts, and there was somebody near me that when the bell rang, there was always a, oh, this, you know, this audible sigh. So I don't know anything what was happening in this person's interior experience, but by that sigh, I was imagining, you know, that they were just really striving, you know, holding on as much as they can. So just notice the next time you're meditating and the bell rings, what is your response? Can it just be like, there's the sound of the bell, and that's just like another thing that you're aware of? Or is there a type of letting go or a sense of relief or a sense of waking up? Like, oh yeah, right, okay, now I need to pay attention to what's happening around me. Another thing that you can look at to see if you have a sense of striving that may be out of your awareness, out of obvious awareness, is to see if you have a sense of disappointment. Like, oh, I didn't have that experience that I was trying so hard to have. Is there an expectation that wasn't being met, as opposed to just meeting each moment as it arises? Is there a sense of, oh, really, it's over, I didn't get there, I didn't get what I wanted, or something like this? Also, a third thing that you can do in the present moment is to check in whether you're leaning forward, both with your body. Is there a certain leaning forward, like, you know, trying to get something? It can be subtle. I find this for myself when I'm meditating or checking with my posture, I'm often leaning forward. Also can show up as putting your chin up like this too. So maybe the body doesn't go forward so much, but the chin is kind of going up too. Is that a way of kind of like striving shows up that way? But there can also be a kind of a leaning forward in our minds, like, okay, well, as soon as this happens and that's going to happen, oh, then I better got to do this and that got to do that. There's this kind of, you know, this push, this, I don't know how to explain it exactly, but this sense of leaning forward with our minds. So those are ways that you can check in with the present moment to see if striving is a way, the way that there's maybe a little bit too much energy, as well as with the attitudes. You can see, like, what is your general attitude about meditation practice, and how have you been socialized, or what teachings have you heard that may make you think that you need to do a lot of energy? And if you discover these things, I find it's very helpful to bring to mind, oh yeah, just the amount of effort that's required to feel two hands touching each other. It doesn't have to be more. It's, the secret is not the amount of energy, it's just doing it again and again and again. And this is sustainable, just to have feel your two hands touching. That's sustainable. For me, I often have this feeling, this idea, like, am I using a sledgehammer on the object, or am I using a feather? Right? We don't need to use a sledgehammer. there's a certain type of violence in that, right? But just this simply noticing the object. So one way that too much energy can show up is with striving. A second way that too much energy can show up is with restlessness. Many of you may recognize that restlessness is one of the hindrances. Like, it's well recognized that this is a way that can get in the way of feeling settled or feeling calm and collected. Restlessness can feel like this energy that's bouncing throughout the body. For me, I note it as like bolting energy, like I just want to get out of here. I want to be anywhere doing anything except this moment sitting here. Just that feeling like just I gotta go. Maybe some of the people that left here had some restlessness, right? Just that feeling in your body. But it can also be just this little caffeinated feeling of just bouncing around energy, and it shows up as squirminess, shifting your posture a lot, just not feeling settled, not feeling able in your skin and settled in your skin or somehow. Restlessness also can show up in our thoughts. So there can be like an obsessive quality to the thoughts, not in a pathological way, but in this over and over and over and this repetition and like this repetition over and over and over again to the content of the thoughts, as well as the thoughts may be out of proportion to their importance. Maybe that the thing that we're going over and over again is a minor experience. Remembering to pick up milk at the grocery store, just going over, okay, when you go to the grocery store, remember to get milk. Okay, when you go to the grocery store, the milk, go to the milk section that's probably at the back of the store, or whatever it is, right? Just noticing if there's that kind of, I'm going like this with my hand, this feeling of over and over and over and over again. So there's a few ways that we, just like we could work with striving in a few ways, there's a few ways we can work with restlessness. One is we can do mindfulness. You can think of it as like with a wide-angle lens. So that is, open up our awareness as wide as you can in a way that makes sense for you. And then if you have your mindfulness a little bit more aware, maybe you can notice like, oh yeah, here's restlessness as something that's arising, but your awareness is bigger. So you're noticing that it's coming up. You're noticing the quality of your thoughts or this agitated feeling in the body. But maybe your awareness is big. Maybe your awareness like includes sound. That same feeling, like if you're going to do awareness of sounds, you often will like open up your awareness. So open it up in a certain way, and then allow the energy maybe to like bounce around in a bigger space. Maybe like if you're in an elevator with 10 people who happen to be really tall and really big, and maybe they're really smelly too, and you're kind of in this little elevator, and you go up the elevator, but then the door opens, and you go into a cathedral. Big, beautiful cathedral. Those 10 big, smelly people are still there, but now you've spread out into a cathedral, and it's a very different experience than being in an elevator. So if that makes sense to you, that's one way to work with restlessness, is to kind of open up your awareness. A second is to do the opposite experience, is to come in with a zoom lens. And maybe restlessness feels like you want to just get up from your seat. Well, then you can just like, well, where is that feeling in my body? Where is that get-up feeling? Is it in my legs? It's my arms, my torso? Where is it? And then maybe you may say, I'm not sure, it's in the lower half of the body, though. I kind of want to walk out. Then you can say, well, is it the upper legs or the lower legs? You know, kind of get it a little bit more and more succinct. What is that experience of wanting to get up? How do I experience that in the body? Often this is easier in the body. But we could also do this with our minds. We could look at, well, what is it that I'm having these repetitive thoughts that are going quickly again and again and again, kind of this agitated feeling? Maybe we could zoom in a little bit and then just inquire, is there an emotion that's underneath that's fueling these thoughts? Often a feeling of not being safe. We have to make ourselves feel safe, so a little bit of fear. Or maybe a feeling, something that we don't want to pay attention to. So we're using our thoughts to distract us from maybe a feeling of sadness or loneliness or something like that. So there can be a fuel underneath the thoughts that's giving them this quality. So maybe we could zoom in there. But without doing a big psychoanalytic analysis on this, more just quietly, is there something underneath here? And if something, kind of an intuitive sense, bubbles up, great. It may not. You may not get an answer to the question, is there an emotion underneath here that's fueling this restlessness? But you could look into the fueling that's underneath, as well as what are some of the underlying thoughts or beliefs, maybe that's it, or attitudes towards thinking. That is, you may have this belief underneath that I'm going to think my way to freedom. I'm going to think my way to greater ease. I'm going to think my way to greater peace. Therefore, I better keep thinking. Of course, you might have those thoughts, right? Just like we may feel like we're striving comes from the way that we're conditioned and the way the society is and the way that perhaps our professional lives are. Many of us may earn our living by solving problems and thinking. And we can think we can have this belief that, well, it worked in this scenario of my life. It should work in this other one as well. It turns out that meditation, you can't think your way all the way to freedom. You can think your way a little bit, a certain distance, but it won't take you to the greatest freedom, happiness, ease, well-being. This turns out to be very tricky. It turns out to be very tricky to kind of learn to navigate this, of to put down the thinking, or to put down the belief that thinking is the answer. We can't put down the thinking so easily, but instead we can allow the thinking maybe to go into the background. It'll still be there, but not have it give it its greatest importance. And sometimes it's easiest to do that if we bring our attention to the body. It's like it can be a good foil for what's happening in the mind. To look at, as I said, kind of like zoom into the experience in the body, physical sensations, throbbing, stabbing, heat, cold, tingling, those types of things. Or maybe, as I said earlier, you can open up with awareness so that the thoughts don't have as much weight, as much authority. They may still be there, but they just don't feel as compelling. So I started this talk with a simile of the goldsmith about to look at energy, concentration, and equanimity, and to not exclusively look at energy, and to not exclusively look at concentration, not to exclusively look at equanimity. And then in this talk, I talked just about energy, And then I talked about too much energy. But I think I'm going to stop here. And then in subsequent talks, I'll be giving a number of Dharma talks early in this year. I'll kind of develop this some more. What about too little energy? Right, this is an issue too. Sometimes we just feel exhausted and overwhelmed with our lives and how to work with that. And to work with concentration, what are some of the ways that support concentration and support some tranquility and sense of well-being and equanimity? How can we have some balance of mind without a feeling of indifference or without a feeling of apathy or disconnection? These are really important qualities. And it's such a skill to think about balance and everything, how we're applying our practice, what we're paying attention to, how we pay attention to, and when we pay attention to it, what do we notice, our balance in our reactions to it, right? There's no end to what we can pay attention to and whether we can do that in a balanced way. So I'll stop here and open it up for some questions or comments.
There's times that I sit down and there's what it feels like is that for some reason I just feel all this joy, and it's like this, it's pretty quick after I sit down, not often obviously, but and then it just, this is like this surge. And the whole body just wants to get up and dance, you know, right? It's just this outpouring into, and then I just sit through that, and then it's fine, right? I'm just in awareness. I assume that's different than restlessness.
Let me ask you this: is at the same time? Is there a sense? What's the mood of this? You said joy, but is there a sense of any
joy
else?
And love and awareness? It's in a place of awareness, yeah. But then there's just this.
Yeah. So this sounds like joy. That joy is often described as kind of like an energetic upwelling that can be felt in lots of different ways, and it can be felt in the body as a movement of energy, kind of like a flowing of energy. And often after it dissipates, there's a sense of well-being afterwards. Is that, yeah. Yeah, so this is a kind of a natural thing that happens with practice. We often can't make it happen. We just, yeah. It's often when we kind of have able to let go of those things that are non-joyful in some way. We can't make them go away, but maybe we're not holding on to them so tightly, and so then just joy just naturally arises. Yeah, that sounds nice.
And in terms of striving, compared to how I was, I shifted a lot there. And it seems like the less striving there is, the more equanimity in it there is. And maybe you'll talk more about the relationship between those two, if they're two different things.
Yeah, so there's not a guarantee that, I hadn't thought about this in exactly the way that you put it, but maybe you're right, because I'm pointing towards balance with energy, and balance and equanimity definitely go together. So I think so, yes. As we're striving less, then we're less attached to particular outcomes, or we are less identified with ways that we think that we should be, or something like that. And when we can lessen either of those, there's definitely more equanimity. So, yes.
And then there's a period, and I still struggle with this sometimes, of missing the energy of striving. Like there was, even though it wore me out in its most intense form, that excitement about life when, you know, and I look at other people who are reading every book on some topic, or they're, you know, they're just on fire about something. And sometimes I miss that and it gets me caught.
Can you say a little bit more about getting caught?
Well, then I'll just think I need to do that. And so then I'll start more. It's more because in a way I can't do it anymore. So it's more comes up as criticism and self-judgment. Like I'm not doing enough. If only I, you know, whether it's professionally or home goals or helping in the collective, you know, if only I were more dedicated or energetic, or, you know, then I could do these things.
Yeah. There's a difference in striving and moving towards a goal and, like, wanting to read all the books on a topic or something like that. There's a difference in doing that because you think you're going to get something in particular at the end, or you're going to become somebody, or, you know, something particular is going to happen. There's a difference between doing it for that reason and doing it because it's coming out of your heart and it just feels like, of course, this is what I want. This is what's arising. And the outcome doesn't really matter so much as it just feels like this is the right thing to do at this time, according to the conditions. So there's often we're doing it because we want something, and that can be exhausting. But you can see, is there something that makes your heart sing? And to do things that make your heart sing. And sometimes a singing heart takes the form of reading lots of books on a topic so that you can, I don't know, just because that's what your heart says to do. Does that make sense? Yeah.
From what you say, I think overall I'm actually fairly good at balancing the energy. But there's something that I just can't deal with that's a real hindrance is I can't deal with sleepiness. If I make, it'll just conquer me right away. If I make the mistake of saving my daily meditation till, say, after 8, and I think, I don't care how sleepy I am, I'm going to get through this. I'm in my 7th year of practice now, and it never happens. I get sleepy, and I get up, and I crawl into bed. And even on a retreat, I leave the room. I was wondering if you have some suggestions for this.
Yeah, great. I think it's fantastic that you noticed that, okay, meditation in the evening leads to this particular thing. Can you honor that's just the way your body is, your life is, and meditation in the evening is?
Yeah, I can, although it's not always practical, and sometimes I do need to meditate in the evening. So that's sort of how I've dealt with it now, but it just seems to me it shouldn't be such a hindrance.
There's a few things that you can do. You probably know all the things how to work with sleepiness.
I know the standard instructions, you know, but they don't seem to help. I think somehow I sort of resent it a little bit. What's underneath is sort of a resentment at being asked to stay up. And maybe that, you know, I hadn't thought of that until I just started talking to you about that. So there's maybe more to it than just being sleepy.
Yeah. What about making sleepiness your object of meditation? Like, oh, this is what sleepiness feels like. I'm exhausted. I'm going to fall asleep. I know. How do I know? And then you're like, oh, I'm leaning forward. I'm drooping. And wow, look, my thoughts are dreamy.
And then I find the experience miserable. I just did. It's like, yeah, wouldn't it be great if I were, like, not vertical right now?
Maybe you can give yourself permission. I know I'm going to fall asleep because I've fallen asleep the past 100 times I've tried to do this. And say, or maybe even just say, maybe just get into bed and even say, okay, I'm going to try to meditate for X amount of time before I fall to sleep. And those 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 2 minutes before you fall asleep, but meditate may be helpful.
You know what, that actually may help me, because I think that it reminds me now, there have been a couple times maybe where I just get in bed, but I keep my eyes open. And then for some reason, I'm suddenly not so sleepy anymore, and I can do so. Maybe I'll try that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so easy to think that we, of course, have to behave a particular way, and of course, sleepiness is common to all of us. We work so hard. Yeah.
So the striving, and you said you can tell sometimes because when you're in the middle of
Yeah, so striving, I feel that sense sometimes when the bell rings and I'm so relieved. But also what I see a lot is I tend to get sleepy like a lot, especially if I'm sitting down for more than a half hour. And quite often that striving is to stay awake because I hear what you were telling her and I try to do that sometimes and be aware. So there is the striving, even though my energy's really low. So it's an odd, I don't know, juxtaposition, or if you have any advice about that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, of course, right? If you're feeling like you're too tired, then you feel like, oh, you have to double down with even more energy when you feel like exactly you don't have energy. You know, one thing that I find with regard with working with energy that really helps is to work with my body and my posture. So if I find that I'm a little too tired to like, okay, just try to have more alert posture, or if I'm feeling like really restless or striving too much, sometimes I will do laying down meditation. Not because I have hurt my back, but just because I feel like I'm just too restless. And somehow lying down, right, just calms you down. So it doesn't necessarily won't work for everybody, but to use the body as a support in whatever way you can. And then I think this is, it's such a great skill to play with too much, too little, too much, too little. And sometimes I have, like, I will do this where I'll touch my two hands together and think, like, how much energy does it take to do this? And I will just be here and I'll be paying attention to my two hands touching and just noticing what's the least amount of effort I can do here. And that is actually can be helpful. It can help us just notice when we're doing a little much too much sledgehammer or too much not enough effort. I don't know, was that helpful?
Possibly. Yes.
Do you want to ask your question again, or ask something more?
No, I'll try that.
Okay. Okay, so it's 11:00. So I want to say thank you to you all, and I'll stay here if you have some additional questions. Thank you. And happy holidays.